Right, welcome to the arm buff. Hector and I are here at the front. Konstantinos should have been here, but he's in the middle of a panic house move at the moment, so couldn't make it this week. So we can say all kinds of silly things about him, and he can't talk back. Obviously, we're all Debian developers. We are lucky enough to be employed by people who are happy that we're Debian developers and wanted to spend some of our work time on making ARM stuff work better in Debian. More about that a bit later. So, quick agenda. Believe me, as I said, this is not a lecture. We want you lot to take part as well, but a quick agenda of the things that I've got on my list. Please, by all means, shout if there's anything else you want to talk about, and we'll try to get to it all. So, there are four, I suppose, different ARM ports that people have worked on in and around Debian. We have the current ARM port, which is mostly dead. It last released with Lenny, so once Lenny finishes security support, we will stop supporting the old ARM ABI. So there are some people out there with some seriously old hardware who we were going to stop supporting. There's not much we can do about that. We can't support everything at all ends of the scale. There was the ARM EB, which never hit Debian, although there are some weird people out there still using it, I'm told. We have the current ARM EL port, which in Debian supports ARM V4T onwards, but in Ubuntu is targeted at V7. Please, hands up in the audience, do we all understand what V4T and V7 and things like that mean? Does anybody not? Okay. The ARM architecture has gone through multiple different versions, not just the actual names used by the chips, but they have different instruction set versions. V4 is now really quite old. V4T is version 4, but with support for the thumb instruction set as well. We've moved on V5, V6, V7. V7 is the current architecture that ARM are pushing. It's what you see in things like the Tegra, the very latest chips from TI and Freescale. It's the current thing that everybody really is using in current mobile phones that are shipping today.
NVIDIA.
Endian. Yes. Now, the latest thing right at the end of that list is ARMHF. This is the new ARM port that we are bootstrapping. The difference between ARMEL and ARMHF is very, very subtle. Both will run on exactly the same hardware. ARMEL will happily run on V7. ARMHF, we're targeting V7 and up only. It could technically run on earlier hardware, but it's not worth doing. I'll come to that in a moment. The big difference is in terms of floating point hardware. From V7 onwards on ARM, you can rely on having hardware floating point support. Previously, you couldn't. However, the ARMEL ABI is designed around coping without hardware floating point. To do that, you end up passing all of your floating point arguments into functions using the integer registers of your CPU. Now, that means a lot of good things. If you don't have guaranteed hardware floating point, it means that you don't break. But it does mean that when you do have hardware floating point support, you end up taking the cost of copying arguments into and out of your integer registers on every single function call. That's really, really slow if you're calling into short functions that do two or three operations and then return. You can end up being swamped by the cost just of this overhead. ARMHF, we are targeting V7 in both Debian and Ubuntu. In fact, here you go, there's more details here. Now, you can use the same kernel for both ARMEL and ARMHF. The kernel is ABI agnostic, basically because the kernel does not do floating point itself. you don't need to worry, therefore, about how you pass floating point arguments. Obvious, but it needs stating. So what we can do is run an RML kernel, and we're doing this on some of our machines, and you can happily have a chroot for now with ArmHF. Once we have multi-arch up and running, then you will be able to have RML ArmHF running multi-arch. There are some wrinkles around that, in that, of course, the two are not binary compatible. You cannot run and share any libraries or processes in the same address space. They must all be consistent one way or the other, otherwise things explode in interesting ways. So, Konstantinos started the ArmHF bring-up just about 12 months ago. We were talking about it last year in New York. He's supported by the company he works for, Genesi. They've given out loads and loads of their Ifika MX notebooks and little nettop machines to lots of people all over the world who are helping to, you know, just generally port more stuff to ARM, and in particular ArmHF. He's been through and has bootstrapped ArmHF in the Debian Ports archive, the vast majority of the normal archive builds. The fun bits happen, to be honest, just like when you're bootstrapping any new port in Debian, is when you want to start building from the ground up, the awkward things that don't depend on C at the bottom. So obviously, self-hosted languages, Java, Haskell, C-Lisp, there are probably others, but those are the three we keep on talking about. Each of those needs involved bring-up with typically with experts. Some of them have really good instructions. Some of them, it's a voyage of discovery.
This is a Genesi laptop or netbook that Konstantinos is doing the ArmHF work for.
So. Yeah, Genesi have that's a.
It's running ArmHF Debian right now. It's Riku. So if you want to see it, he has it around.
Yeah, that's an IMX51, which is a Freescale CPU. Yes. They are Genesi are just moving over to the IMX53, which is faster, has more features, and is generally good. But it's really good. Obviously, they have a vested interest in making ArmHF work because they get much better performance on that hardware. Lots of other folks are seeing the light too, to the extent that we're expecting most of the system-on-chip vendors to be providing drivers and support for ArmHF real soon now. Discussion on IRC and on mailing lists suggests that almost everybody will be giving us, even much as we may not care about it in Debian, things like the hardware 3D drivers, that kind of thing, even the binary blobs. Of course, they need to be built compatibly with the rest of your system, so we're expecting ArmHF versions of those too. So do we have...
Okay. I was wondering why the drivers need to support ArmHF, but yeah, if they're binary blobs, then yes, I understand. Yeah. Okay.
We are working together. There is a group of us, me, Hector, Konstantinos, a couple of other folks. We are looking at inclusion into the main Debian archive for ArmHF real soon now. We're evaluating. We have a wiki page on the Linaro site. On the Debian site,
Wiki, debian.org, yes. ARM, Hardfloat, and then there's...
BuildD.
BuildD, yeah. And there's all... So just search for ARM Hardfloat on the wiki.
Yeah, there's a number of pages there. That's where Konstantinos has been tracking his status, showing what was working, what bugs have been posted. I said, we're evaluating about half a dozen different boards, and we're just working out what the best options are, and we're hoping to get official Debian BuildDs up and running by the end of August. We know that most of the archive already builds, but of course we need to rebootstrap inside the main archive from what we have. That's the plan. Now, that is what I'm going to say about ArmHF. Do we have any questions, points, comments? Lots. Go.
The original ARM port was Hardfloat.
Yes.
Which was a pain in the whatever for nearly everybody, except for the one person in the world that had a floating point variant of a strong ARM or something.
Exactly, yes.
And the process there was that you used your hardware floating point processor and then were rescued by the kernel with the pretend one.
Yeah,
exactly. A huge cost. Is that likely to be the same so that you can run, so that if you haven't got a floating point unit, you can run ARMHF on...
Nobody is thinking in those terms. The reason that we're targeting V7 onwards with ARMHF is that you can rely on hardware floating point.
Okay.
You could bootstrap it yourself if you want on older hardware, but to be honest, there really is no game to be made.
Okay.
The point is, as Nick says, the original ARM ABI, as far as we're concerned in Debian, did expect hardware floating point, despite the fact about 0.5% of all the boards ever shipped had it. So then the kernel would trap an illegal instruction error, take the exception, would deal with it, with the kernel-based floating point emulator, and then switch back, which then gave you a cost of about 100 times slower than it needed to be. That was why we switched to the ARMEL, the new EABI, which then assumed that you didn't have hardware floating point. If you did need to do floating point operations, you could then do them in userland without that incredibly costly trap in kernel. So,
would it be possible to mix ARMEL and ARMHF up with, GCC has this calling convention, GCC can usually, when compiling with GCC, you can specify calling convention to be used, like in the x86 world, you can say std call and things like that. Would it be possible to do something similar with ARMEL and ARMHF?
Absolutely. One GCC, you can use exactly the same compiler binary to output either ABI, but that's only a small part of the problem. So far, what we have, we've been doing a lot of cross-compiling and a lot of native compiling, and we deliberately target explicitly. We default to one or the other, so we have two tool chains. You can do it in one go. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, I guess...
Go on, P2, stand up.
I guess ARMHF might make sense for... if you're on an ARM 11, because I think most ARM 11 implementations do have floating point hardware.
But we thought about it, but there is no guarantee that all ARM V6s will have floating point. That's why we picked V7. To be honest, also, some of this work is sponsored by ARM and Linaro, who, of course, are trying to sell, admittedly, the latest versions, the newest shiny ARM processor. So, of course, we're going to target the latest. But it is also, there are lots of real devices out there using V7 processors now. That's what we're targeting.
And presumably, if you...
It's on.
It's on.
Yeah. And presumably, if you statically link, just like you could have Softfloat under ARM... You can use old ARMEL stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. The old ARMEL stuff will still continue to work on the newer processors as well for the foreseeable. I don't expect that we're necessarily going to kill the ARMEL port in Debian anytime soon before anybody panics.
One more question. Does ARMHF imply that TUMP2 instructions will be used, or is it orthogonal?
That is a very good point. Yes, we're also, as we can expect that there will be TUMP2, in ARM V7, we are going to be pushing for TUMP2 in a lot of cases, which then gives... I'm using terminology that not everybody may understand. Does anybody here want me to explain what ARM, THUMB, and THUMB2 mean in terms of instruction sets? Right. Are we all that? Wonderful. Easy. THUMB2 will allow us, of course, to significantly reduce the executable size, the code size of the stuff you're running, which generally is expected to give you better performance just from reduced instruction cache hits. It's no guarantee. The one thing I haven't actually shown here, because I didn't quite manage to get all the details down yet, is we are doing benchmarks as part of the Linaro work on ARMHF. Konstantinos has gone through and is doing a back-to-back comparison of ARMEL and ARMHF binaries. I know Clint has some benchmarks as well from last year, if I remember correctly. Yeah. There are places where you will not gain anything from the switch. We'll be totally open and honest about that. If you're running tight integer-based code, obviously changes to floating point format and floating point arguments are not going to be noticeable at all. However, in code where you are expecting to be running a lot of floating point heavy, we've seen typically performance boosts could be anywhere from 10%, 30% on some particular, not quite contrived, but probably not representative benchmarks. Konstantinos is seeing a factor of two or three in performance improvement. The Povray renderer, for example, of course, is stuck. It uses incredibly nested recursive code. Going up and down the stack of recursive functions with ArmyL involves basically you're spending all of your CPU time just copying data in and out of registers. It's utterly pointless. So there are many places where we can gain. We'd expect that for a typical system these days, especially where people are wanting to get nice, shiny, compositing desktops and everything, you will see a noticeable speed up by switching ABI. That's why we're doing all of this work. If you want to see more details, again, search in the Debian wiki for ARM hard float, and there are links to all of the numbers that we have. Anything more that people would like to ask? Tom?
Two microphones. So just a comment to follow up on that. One of the things that's going on in the upstream Java community right now is a patch to the JDK for tail call optimization, which will hopefully make recursive calls much, much less expensive. And that would be of interest, of course, to, in this case, Java directly, yep. But also particularly interesting for derived languages like Scala or Clojure that use recursive idioms quite heavily. So, you know, stay tuned to that space and hopefully, you know, trunk versions of the JDK will enable that. It'd be really fun.
Cool. Moving on from the ArmyL versus ArmHF stuff, hands up anyone who hasn't heard about the, I guess, controversies going on the Linux kernel mailing list in the last few months to do with ARM. The Linux on ARM history is a complicated one. Unlike on x86, where you can basically target one or maybe two different machine types and know that, you know because everything's an Intel, you know everything looks like a PC, you know where your serial ports live, you know where your memory lives, you know where all of your normal system resources live in memory addresses in terms of interrupts and all of that, you can have a nice, simple, single architecture tree that basically, it's called i386, but it specifies it's a PC. ARM is more complicated. The ARM, as a company, have taken a policy of not telling all of their licensees how to connect everything up. You know, they sell you the rights or license to use an ARM core or one of many ARM cores, but then so many different licensees, so many other actual chip manufacturing companies over the years have added their own IP around that, and they've all gone, they've covered almost every possible combination of how to connect things. So you can't necessarily have a single ARM binary that will run on any ARM, on every ARM CPU out there, because, well, actually, in a lot of cases, the ARM CPU in the middle is actually is tiny compared to, say, the video, the video componentry attached, or to the onboard networking, or to the cache or the memory. They're all connected totally differently. That has led to a huge amount of fragmentation within the Linux kernel in the ARM community, and Linus has almost thrown his toys out of the pram about this in recent months. If you look at the change logs on the later 2.6 kernels, you'll see moving from one to the next, typically it could be a huge proportion of the check-ins moving from one to the next, or the changes, are entirely within the Arch ARM tree. That means that there's a lot of work out there just for what some people see as a small toy architecture. Those of us working on it, of course, see it as more important. But for a lot of people who don't know the nitty-gritty, it looks just like there's a huge amount of churn for no reason. Now, in some cases, that is true. There are, last time a friend of mine looked, there were 15, I think, different, almost identical UART serial drivers that did exactly the same job, but just had different addresses hard-coded as to where those UARTs lived. It's been getting very messy for a while. And there was a real, I guess, fear that Linus might actually just say, we've had enough of this, I'm not going to accept any ARM patches, I'm just going to throw it out of the kernel, you lot can fork it, and it's your own problem, this is too messy for me. There's been a lot of consternation about this, obviously, in the very large ARM community of people who are making money out of selling ARM processors, especially ARM processors running Linux and other free software. Linaro and a lot of the people involved in Linaro are working on this. There is a real effort, a real push to consolidate how the different system-on-chip families are supported in the kernel. I'm getting ahead of myself. Do people know who Linaro are in this room? Does anybody not? We have one or two. Linaro is a non-profit group that is a consortium founded by ARM and a number of their partners. So several of the system-on-chip vendors are involved. Even IBM are involved, not because they actually directly sell ARM system-on-chips. They just have a vested interest. They manufacture them for lots of other people, for example. It's an effort to basically take into the software world the ARM model in the hardware world. ARM does not ever make any actual real ARM CPUs. Instead, they sell the components, and then they share out the cost of developing those components with all of their licensees. So people like TI, Freescale, NVIDIA, a whole bunch of other people pay a smaller cost to ARM for licensing that core CPU than it would cost to develop themselves. That's a wonderful model. ARM are making reasonable amounts of money. They're paying for a lot salaries for lots of us. They're nice people. We like them. In the software world, it's been utter chaos, and there's been nothing like that, which is one of the reasons why we've seen all of the different system-on-chip vendors shipping their own Linux trees, their own drivers, their own distributions, none of which actually seem to work all that well compared to what might happen if they just shared their work. Again, in this room, I doubt it's going to be a difficult sell to say, sharing what you're working on is a really good thing. So ARM started Linaro last year, and it's a consortium that isn't necessarily to do with people putting money in. It's more a case of the various companies involved putting engineer time in. So ARM has a number of engineers in. I can't remember exactly how many. Wookie might remember. He's looking puzzled as well. So ARM and TI and Freescale and IBM and a number of six or nine other large-ish companies you've all heard of because they're all shipping big devices got together to start with. Since then, there have been lots and lots other companies also putting engineer time in, small bits of funding in cases where it's necessary, but the main point is we're now actually working together, collaborating on making things work properly. So this all feeds in. Linaro are now pushing for consolidation in the ARM, in the Linux kernel for ARM, and this is being greeted by a lot of delight, almost, it seems, from the upstream folks, and we're hoping it's going to work. Any questions, comments? I'm sorry, I am rabbiting on here. Please shout if there's anything else you want to say, discuss.
Well, Linaro is mostly caring about latest cores on ARMv7, and we still have devices, ARMv5, which we don't support in Debian, and because and there is no support in mainline kernels, and there is people working their own patch sets and maintaining their own devices out of tree. So it might be interesting, maybe not Linaro, but some team within Debian trying to get these patches, organize them, and try to make some kind of nice patch set to send to upstream. So maybe we can have RML kernels and support devices properly on the RML user land.
Okay, P2.
Maybe a slightly side question, but when is a device 3 compiler in Debian going to be updated to the latest version? Because it doesn't work at all for ARM at the moment.
Oh, okay. I don't. Yeah. Who's the maintainer?
Aurelien Jerome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been kind of inactive lately, so maybe an NMU.
At the moment you have to find out on the web where the Git tree is, where this thing lives. Otherwise, there is no way you can compile your own device.
Oh, okay. Feel free to talk to grab me afterwards, and I can talk through that with you. I mean, Grant Likely, who works with me in Lenovo in the office of the CTO, is doing a lot of the pushing now upstream, and is trying to get device tree accepted. We're hoping that in kernel 3.1, it should be usable for just about all of the current ARM devices. You know, all of the current brand new ARM devices, at least. It's a long road, but we're getting there.
Yeah, no, I've used this development tree for internal Tegra work, so I know it works. But
okay,
you have to get the device tree compiler is the thing you have to look for manually.
Sure, I'm explaining for others as well. There is even a real push for the first time ever. We might actually be able to get a single Z image that will boot and run on a large number of totally different, unrelated systems on chip. But by using device tree. Have people heard of device tree or flattened device tree? Again, I'm going off using jargon that may not mean much to everybody.
Yeah, apparently the device tree compiler has been last uploaded in 2008, so I think you can get the package and upload the newer version yourself.
Yeah, P2, well volunteered. All yours. by using the device tree to pass hardware configuration around between the bootloader, the kernel, and anything else that needs it, it means we might finally have a flexible enough system that we can run a single kernel. That would make life so much easier for upstream. It would make life so much easier for, well, in Debian as well. We would be able to have we wouldn't need to have the potentially 20, 30, 40 different flavors of ARM kernel. If we want to support all of the new devices, we could do it with one, and that would be lovely.
I thought the only exception was this LPA extensions we have in Cortex A15.
Yes. Fine. Debian ARM kernels at the moment, I mean, we have a lot of devices supported, but there's always a trade-off. Again, we have this huge multitude of different possible chips and systems that we can support, but there's always a trade-off. Do we support every single one possible and need to then have 50 different flavors in the archive, or do we target the most common ones and then other people are going to struggle? They may need to maintain their own kernel. We tend to go for the latter, just for sheer manpower issues and also build time. Obviously, the more flavors of kernel you have in the archive, the longer it takes to build. And traditionally, the ARM build these have not been the fastest. So it would be a pain if we ended up trying to build 20 kernel flavors on a slow build D, and then a new kernel security update comes out, and it takes 36 hours to build. We don't want that.
But that might change if we get multi-core build Ds, which nowadays is more possible.
At the moment, we have a lot of V5 build Ds hosted by ARM. We have some hosted at other companies. I'm pushing for ARM to host the new ARMHF build Ds. There are issues around that, and DSA have some questions about networking and things, which we're going to work through. I'm also hoping that we'll be able to update some of the existing build Ds and replace those with newer, faster, shinier hardware. We're still working on it.
Yeah.
So, other distros. Right. Sorry.
I wonder if there is a problem with too many kernel flavors and slow build. Why won't you just cross-compile the bigger packages? Another what? Case is like for example packages like Fennec or which are even too big to be compiled with link time optimizations and for C++ code like in those packages it adds like 20% speed so even if it takes more than 4 gigabytes of address space then cross build link those parts would give a not simple benefit and well ARM is still a lot slower than other architectures so those benefits are worth a lot more.
Yes. It's sorry.
So why would you just massively cross-compile things?
There are issues with some of the bigger packages. We know that. I mean, I've worked in the past on a Chrome browser on ARM, and absolutely, simply linking it, you can run out of address space. This is not ideal. We have had people looking more and more at cross-compiling for the slow architectures. Wookie's going to be talking about something about that in the very next talk in this room.
Wookie?
But if we can give Wookie a microphone.
Yeah, see, thank you.
He can probably say something more.
So we had a conversation about this with FTP Mail. I mean, the reason we don't cross-build things at the moment is because we're not allowed to if we're uploading it to Debian. It's simply not permitted. So the question is, when should that be permitted? Are there good reasons why the archive should accept cross-build packages? And there are clearly advantages to building things that way. But we have to believe that what we get out is actually right, which fundamentally the powers that be in release world aren't convinced of yet. So we need to persuade people that it is reliable. Ultimately, it's a port decision. So if the ARM people decide that, in fact, we think cross-built stuff is good enough, then we can decide to upload some. Basically, so but that's something we're just starting to be able to do. So,
is this on? Yes. Yeah. How about using an emulator for buildies like QEMU or something like that? Because you can run them on easily. They are slow, but you have there's lots of say PC hardware available. I believe it's much more abundant than ARM.
We're no longer at the stage. I think we need to be thinking about emulating things for builds. Of course, you'd still end up with the same problem of address space, because of course the emulated machine is still 32-bit and all that kind of thing. We now have sufficiently fast hardware available, I believe, to be able to make things work. I mean, a current top-end 8-core AMD 64 machine will still run a lot faster than even the fastest single-ARM CPU, but we're catching up.
Nick?
Steve, if we're just having one user land, all ARMHF, why do you have to build it on every single different kind of board? Surely this is just a rebuilding the kernel for the different target board, and you just build the user land once on your fastest ARM core.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Right. Sorry, I thought you meant having multiple kernels, but you have to rebuild Debian all the time.
The kernels is just for the different flavors of kernel package. The user land is consistent across all of it. Anything else? Andy, stand up.
If it's required, I stand up, of course. So just jumping back to a bit previous slide, we spoke about ARMEL and ARMHF. So I understand the benefits of ARMHF, but does it mean that we are just then going to fade away with ARMEL?
No.
So it means that we are just doubling the archive size for ARM?
Yes.
Was a question?
The reason for it's a simple answer is unless the FTP masters unless the FTP masters have a major problem with that, and I've been assured several times by Mark alone that there isn't a problem. Yes, we are expecting to have two ARM ports in the archive. If we ask for a third, then there might be trouble. Again, this is why, I mean, going back 4 or 5 years when we first started talking about Army L coming into the main archive, the same question was brought up then of, well, how many ABIs do you want? We have thought about this. Army L is going to cover all of the older machines, or, you know, V4T. The reason why we're staying at V4T is so all of those people who have the open MOCOs and old devices that cannot run anything newer, we're not going to abandon those folks. Well, at least not for a while yet. You know, they tend to be quite enthusiastic and know where we live and might come round to find us and ask us hard questions. So we're going to carry on supporting them for now. And we will continue to support, as I said, at the moment, the main buildings we have for Army L are V5 only. So we're not about to drop those machines either, clearly. But there is such a gain to be had by having ARMHF for the very latest machines that we absolutely want to do that.
There is one more thing, is the FPU. Mm. We're building ARMHF, we have a floating point unit, and there are several floating point units with an ARM core, and you can have we're building ARMHF with BFP D16, which is compatible across most cores, but it happens that Neon floating point unit is attached to more cores and it's becoming default, and I think it was only Tegra 2 which didn't have this floating point unit, but Tegra 3 is going to have Neon, so maybe somebody see a reason why not building Neon by default or changing this.
Yeah, Cortex A8, which is the first generally available ARM V7 architecture chip, mandated that you must have a Neon unit attached. Neon is a vector floating point unit similar to SSE on Intel. Not exactly the same design, not exactly the same features, but the same kind of thing. It's a SIMD architecture. With Cortex A9, ARM did not enforce that you must chip Neon, but most people did. As Hector points out, the Tegra 2, which is now a very, very common chip in use in lots of machines, the AC100, lots and lots of the Android tablets out there, for example, are now going to the Tegra 2, which is a dual-core A9, runs quite fast, will support a gig of RAM. It's quite nice. Unfortunately, the fact that those are so common, it would mean that shipping expecting Neon always will not work. It's a pain, but it's something we have to live with. At some point in the future, we might consider moving to Neon by default, but it's not something I think we can countenance just yet. It's one of those. It's similarly like we have userland libraries that will use MMX or SSE where possible. We may end up having to have different versions of libraries with different optimizations for this case, just the same.
I think the best way is to have some kind of runtime detection.
Exactly.
Because the GCC is just not smart enough to make good use of Neon for general purpose code. The times you have advantages of Neon code is when you have some handwritten assembly.
Yeah. Yeah. Auto vectorization in GCC is hard. Some of the toolchain folks who live in the office just down the corridor from me at ARM keep on telling me this, and they know GCC a lot better than I do, so I'm not arguing. If you do write hand-optimized SSE or hand-optimized Neon, you can get humongous gains. I mean, one of the things I've still got a patch outstanding I need to push into Chrome for doing UV2RGB color space conversion for video. Going from the initial naive C implementation to one in Neon, I can see a factor of 14 improvement in speed. That kind of thing is so worth having, but you have to have fallbacks. You have to have equivalent code for when that hardware isn't available. Wookie.
So if you want to use Neon, I mean, we have a question as Debian as to exactly how we manage that, because GCC now has a thing called iFunc, which means you can put the Neon code in and the other code, and it will work out at load time which set of functions it should be using and whether to do the cool stuff because it's available on this hardware that it's running on or not. which is neat because it will just always work. But obviously you have to build it in the right way, which is tricky and not how we do things right now. I guess we can. Or we can have partial archives of optimized for particular flavors. You know, we could, like, we have loads of 686 packages for x86 optimized so that your video actually goes fast. You could do the same thing for ARM and have a load of with Neon packages, but only for stuff where it actually matters. But we have to decide which of those we're doing, or just both, depending on which package it is.
It's something that we're still working on, and we don't want to annoy the FTP masters anymore, for example, with even more architectures. Or the release team. We like them. They're nice people. So this, the work that, we've been doing isn't just restricted to Debian. We're not, you know, obviously, just like in every other respect, we're not working alone. Fedora have had an ARM port, but it's still very much a second-class citizen. Well, there are folks now working on...
They started with Migo, actually, which is RPM-based, and they bootstrapped Hardfloat. And Migo used RPM user land to start Fedora.
Yeah. So the Fedora folks are getting ARMHF working. We're having discussions with them. The Gentoo folks, in fact, are slightly ahead of us as well. When Konstantinos started doing the ARMHF Debian port, he was using a very limited subset of a Gentoo system to use as a base, and then basically building binaries one at a time and bringing the system up. I mean, there's a number of us been there bringing up new systems. It's not fun. It's not easy. Whatever you can use to get an extra leg up, you use it. The Majer folks, I've been told, are also looking into an ARM port, thinking ARMHF, maybe, maybe not.
But it's unofficial.
It's unofficial at this point. I'm not saying that there's anybody that this is an exhaustive list by any means. I'm just giving examples. We've explicitly just a week before last started up at Linaro a cross-distro list. Obviously, Linaro and ARM have a vested interest in Linux on ARM working well, no matter which distro. So far, we've been seriously targeting Debian and Ubuntu because that's where a lot of the momentum is. But we've set up this cross-distro list as a useful place where anybody can come and ask questions about porting to ARM. You know, come and get advice about how to target Neon. You know, all of those questions, we're quite happy to provide advice and generally just host some community discussion. Right, how long do we have left? A couple of minutes. Right, there are many, many other questions. These are ones that have just come up in the last week, just while people have been talking on RSC. Apparently, the Toshiba AC100 that we just showed is it has a Tegra chip in. It's never going to be officially supported by the vendor, but there is an unofficial Debian archive being worked on by Julian Andres Close. There's discussions about what we should do in terms of supporting GL. As more and more of the mobile devices out there, of course, most of those are ARM, are coming out with GLES instead of full OpenGL, we may consider building some of the archive differently depending on which architecture you're on. That's a whole big mess that I don't want to get into right now, but it's something people should be considering. We've been looking a lot at cross-bootstrapping. Again, like we had a bit of the beginnings of a discussion earlier, cross-building is a very useful tool when you're targeting a smaller architecture or when you're trying to bring up a new architecture. We've got lots of cross-building, cross-bootstrapping work going on that I don't have time to talk about, but Wookie will soon. And then again, optimizations like Neon or for the particular flavors of ARM processor, there are more things out there than just Neon. There's so many things you can do to make the most of your hardware that it can be a difficult choice to make, like, what's the default. I just want to basically say thanks to, obviously, all the people in Debian who are helping with this, but also the people on the screen behind me who are actively helping to pay Debian people to work on making Debian and ARM work better. Thanks to those, Janessi, Linaro, Toby Churchill, and obviously ARM. Do we have any more questions? You'll have to be quick. time's up. So if anybody would like to ask any more questions, please, obviously I'm going to be around, I'm wearing my, you know, my corporate t-shirt today. Wookie and I will be happy to tell you, you know, more about things, especially if you buy us coffee and beer. Thank you.
Thanks for attending the bomb. Thanks for attending the BOF.